Build a polished wardrobe that shows you stay you wherever you go with Mack Weldon. Use code MACK25 for 25% off your first order of $125 or more at MackWeldon.com.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It's one thing to walk into court knowing you've got a tough case. It's another to watch every single legal strategy you've planned get shut down before trial even begins. That's exactly where Brian Koberger's defense team is right now. Motions to suppress? Denied. Motions to dismiss the indictment? Denied. Motion to take the death penalty off the table? Also denied. At this point, their legal playbook is looking thinner than, you know, an airline napkin or the now non-existent SkyMall. So with every major piece of evidence locked in and the prosecution not missing a single legal step, what does a defense attorney even do at this point? How do you create doubt when the jury is going to hear about the DNA, phone data, and surveillance footage tying your client to the crime? Bob Mata, defense attorney, joining us to discuss all of this and the latest events here in the Brian Koberger case. Bob, you've defended tough cases. When you're sitting in Koberger's defense chair right now looking at the stack of admissible evidence and a death-qualified jury and no prosecutorial wins, what is your next move?
Defend the case.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a look, is a defense, you lose motions to suppress way more frequently than you win them. So Ann Taylor was not surprised. You know, I think that she probably thought that she put forth some good motions, had some valid arguments. You know, if down the road they believe that the judge ruled improperly on the law, then, you know, it gets taken up on appeal if he's convicted. So, you know, if you're Ann Taylor and you're like, all right, like you're assuming you're going to lose him. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying.
Sure.
You're not thinking that you're going into the case where you've stripped the state from all the evidence.
No.
You know, you're going into that case. You're making your record. You're filing the required requisite motions to suppress to preserve those issues for appeal. And, you know, those, like I said, will come down the pike, down the road sometime. Mm-hmm. Like I've been on the record that I think that the IGG aspect of this, if Koberger is convicted, is going to be an issue that's going to make its way up to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Because we need the big court, the high court, to sound off on it.
We need a definition. Yeah.
We do, and we need parameters. We need to know from the highest court in the land, where it becomes the law of the land, what the cops need to do in order to be able to use that. You know, because they like to just call it, you know, it's a tip. You know, it's a tool. It's more than that, you know, and the fact that you share DNA with your relatives, because right now where it stands with that stuff, and I know I've gone a little far afield from your question, but, you know, where it stands right now in the law is that you don't even have standing in terms of being able to attack it if they've gotten a match from a distant relative's DNA. Mm-hmm. Because you share that DNA, they're like, oh, well, you know, this is a cousin fifth removed from you, but we're able to make the family tree and it leads back to you. So we got to you. You don't have the standing to challenge that at this point, because it's not your DNA per se, even though you share the DNA. So that's to me where the real argument's going to lie, because it's well settled that, Tony, if you went into, say, a restaurant and you had a nice glass of iced tea, and, you know, you had your mouth all over it and your hands all over it, and you left that restaurant and the feds are sitting on that restaurant or law enforcement's at that restaurant. After you dip out, they creep in there and say, hey, we're going to need to take that glass. They drop it into you've abandoned that DNA. So mm-hmm. You no longer have a privacy interest in it. It's not the same thing with DNA. That is not the equivalent of DNA. DNA, you're not abandoning it. You know, it's not a thing. Like if you share your DNA with a distant relative, I think personally that there's a privacy interest in that. And I'm not suggesting that law enforcement not be able to use it anymore. What I'm suggesting is go get a goddamn warrant. mm-hmm. that it can't be a fishing expedition. We don't want law enforcement being able to dig into all of us with the thing that tells the government more about us than anything on the planet, which is our DNA, you know, without them having a warrant. It can't be the beginning of their investigation. It like go in with a little probable cause, get the warrant, say, all right, this is what we got. And just have the judge say, all right, I think that that's sufficient. Go ahead, do what you're going to do with the IgG stuff. So, you know, if he's convicted, I think they'll go down the road. But in terms of being Ann Taylor sitting in it, you're going to have to do what most defense attorneys have to do at mm-hmm. a trial. And you're going to have to try to pick apart piece by piece everything that the state's going to be putting on in that case. You know, you got to look at it. You look at it globally, but the attack is piece by piece. You look at it like, all right, we got the touch DNA on the sheath. I think that all of us in this defense room, in terms of our team, would agree that that is probably the most damning piece of evidence they have. It's coming in. How do we attack it? You know, and then you formulate how you're going to attack it. And the easiest attack on touch DNA is it's super easy to leave touch DNA. So you're saying, okay, well, the transfer of touch DNA, we'll be able to establish that that's, you know, that's not real damning evidence. The question that we have to answer is, how did Brian Koberger's DNA end up on that sheath, even if it was easy to do, right? You know, mm-hmm. if it's not him being in that house, at what point was he close enough or in possession of that sheath that his DNA could have been on it, that it's explainable to a jury? Yeah. And, you know, I mean, to me, I hear people like, touch DNA, shit evidence. And it can be very, very challenging for the state to win a case strictly on touch DNA, depending on what the situation is. It's a case by case analysis with that stuff. You know, I mean, if you've got something where, you know, this knife sheath was bought at a Walmart and it was the floor model and 500 people have touched it, you know, and that's something that you're dealing with. You're like, well, this thing was out for public consumption. You can't trust that the person that they found the DNA from that person on that sheath, where it was accessible by so many people, that makes them the killer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, but when you have a situation where you got a single source DNA profile and it's found at the crime scene, it becomes more difficult to think of a way that yeah. may have happened where Brian Koberger didn't have that in his possession. So, like, I'm spending an awful lot of time, if I'm Ann Taylor, trying to craft a theory as to how that may have happened that's plausible to a jury.
And that's the thing. I mean, if you were to look at this, because the thing is, it's going to be a lot of the same arguments that they were making of what they wanted excluded from court, but now it's in court when the trial starts. And they can't be arguing, well, they shouldn't be in court to begin with anymore because it's been allowed in. So that's not going to be on the table, correct? She can't sit there and be correct. Like, well, we don't believe. Now she has to actually argue the merits of the touch DNA, which the science, it's pretty solid. I mean, I don't know where it's very questionable. It's not like this could possibly be someone else. Once they narrow it down and once they did get that statistical match, once they did do the warrant, once they swabbed Koberger, matched it to the touch DNA, I'm like, yep, that's him, because there's no more people in the world that could possibly it could be, because there's not that many people out there. We know it's his DNA on the knife sheath. That doesn't seem to be very much in question. Are they going to try, and how could they try to say that? I mean, are they going to go down that road that it could be somebody else's DNA? Is that even a possibility? And then we'll get to the other situations of, well, it was the floor model at Kmart.
Right. Well, I mean, no, they're not, because yeah. And kind of what the state was saying in terms of the resistance to turning over the IgG data, it was that, look, we have Koberger's DNA and profile. Like, we're not introducing the IgG shit. We have a direct match from the sample that we got from Koberger, and that's what we matched to the profile on the sheath. Mm-hmm. So like the state was always saying, we're never bringing the IgG shit in because we don't need to. We don't need to go down the family tree thing because we got the dude's DNA.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, I mean, it's his DNA. Like, they can put an expert on to try to argue that it's not, but it's like that is the gold standard of evidence for juries.
Yeah.
So they are going. That's what I'm saying, man. Their biggest challenge right now is to come up with a plausible explanation that does not include Brian Koberger being in that house murdering those four people that night as to why his DNA ended up on that sheath.